time to hear how the West can be won.
And maybe a few good stories along the way, too.
Here's Pete Weber on Hockey This Morning
on NHL Home Ice.
You know what? I don't know. I don't think so. I don't know how that works. Maybe that's, you know what? That's your kid's night. And now here's a puck on the left side. Shot! They score! David Legwand! One times one over the left shoulder of Luongo as Fisher sent it across the ice to him. And Legwand, with 2:51 to go in the third, gives the Predators some breathing room.
Tom Callahan on the Preds Radio Network. Got to be careful when you're getting involved in the idle chit-chat there between action, because sometimes you just get caught off guard. And
indeed.
Always happens when you throw to the PA guy. I know that for a fact. You throw to the PA guy, there's going to be a goal. Something's going to happen, and you're either going to miss it or you're going to have to walk all over the PA guy. That just sounds awful. Just awful. Time to talk Western Conference hockey. Happy to welcome in our Western Conference analyst from Nashville, the television and radio play-by-play voice, Pete Weber. How you doing, Pete?
I'm doing great this morning, guys. How are you?
Very well, thank you. And a big win last night at Bridgestone.
Yeah, huge win. Knocking off a Canucks team for the first time on home ice that they could not defeat on home ice in the playoffs last spring. And as a result of that, and obviously some good play in Vancouver this year, Predators finish up the regular season series 2-1-1 against the Canucks.
The Preds, I believe, when Mike Fisher scores, are without a loss.
Yeah, they're with the when Mike Fisher and Nick Spaulding have scored, I think they've lost once.
Wow. Nice numbers, and for a guy like Fisher, even last night with the flu-like symptoms,
yes,
he's played well of late, and a year after the deal was done that brought him to Nashville, it's paying off at an important time of year, isn't he?
That it has. It really has. And short term now, Predators are looking at the similar circumstances, perhaps similar results with the acquisition of Hal Gill, which was completed last Friday. He now has played two games for the club, and they've won a game on the road at Dallas and then last night's game here against Vancouver. And you're able to see with the Gill acquisition last night essentially what David Poile was thinking about. Somebody of size to at least neutralize, if they could, and that's what happened last night, Ryan Kesler of Vancouver.
I don't want to pull away from last night's action, but since you mentioned Vancouver, Detroit also lost, and we were kind
yes.
of joking that Vancouver, when Detroit wins, Vancouver wins. Detroit loses, Vancouver loses. They're shallow in a sense, and every team's going to lose occasionally. And, Pete, here in the pool, I have Detroit losing at home. About 2 weeks ago, we picked this to Vancouver on Thursday night. So,
okay.
I don't know how much is in the kitty right now, but that's going to be interesting. You talk about a potential playoff matchup.
Outstanding matchup, yes.
Two powerhouses in the league, two teams that have been to the final, one winning recently, Detroit, and both coming off losses. That's the sort of thing. And, again, last night's game, Vancouver-Nashville, was another heavyweight battle. We're getting to the stage now, Pete, in both conferences where every game has some sort of effect on the standings. It's rare that you're going to get two last-place teams sort of slugging it out. But Vancouver-Detroit coming off a loss like that, I sometimes think that focuses teams a little more. That should be a must-see hockey Thursday evening.
Yeah, absolutely. It's almost too bad the schedule is so light tonight, you know, to spread
right.
things out a little bit more. But Blues at home against the Bruins tonight, and the Bruins trying to recover a little bit also. And then you have Colorado paying host to the Los Angeles Kings this evening. So those are the ones that involve the Western Conference. But as you say, tomorrow night, then you have the Vancouver playing at Detroit. You have St. Louis and Nashville facing off in Nashville. Dallas trying to get things going again, and they have the Chicago Blackhawks in Chicago. So Dallas bounces back from their loss Sunday and comes up with a win last night. This has really been very, very intriguing, but perhaps the most intriguing game in many ways, if only to check off the names of the teams represented, must have been the one in Columbus where the Blue Jackets, they talk about wake-up calls for San Jose. Well, the wake-up call evidently came after the first period, at which point the Blue Jackets had already built a 4-0 lead on this Sharks club that is now 1-4-1 on the start of their 9-game, 15-day road trip.
Well, they got to be careful. Russ and I are talking about what we call the elevator playoff position there. Third place, you go from third to ninth very quickly, or eighth, or depends where it is. Man, they got to be careful they don't fall out of that, because L.A. is not doing their best to keep pace. They only get 1 point, but Phoenix certainly is. And before you know it, we could be talking about San Jose down on that Mendoza line.
Yes, exactly. Now, Phoenix is the club that has at least tied San Jose in points. Tiebreaker, they stay in the second position in the division, but they are right there. Things could swing very, very quickly by, say, this time coming up on Friday.
Let us talk about not trades to come.
Yeah.
The one that went down yesterday with the three teams involved, Tampa, Colorado, and Detroit. What was more surprising, that Detroit felt the need to go and get a defenseman, or that Steve Downey would draw interest from a team like Colorado?
The latter is what really interests me the most, Mike. I was very surprised that Colorado did have that sort of interest. So they end up with Steve Downey, but then Kyle Quincy ends up getting flipped to Detroit, a little mentor and student making the deal there with Steve Yzerman in Tampa and Kenny Holland in Detroit. Kyle Quincy goes to the Red Wings, and talking with Pat Verbeek last night, he was with Detroit at the time that Sebastian Pichet was drafted, and when you get right down to it, they're very happy to get him, not to mention the first, and now the compilation of draft choices by Tampa is rather impressive.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's an Eastern team, but that's interesting to me just that they're still within shot of a playoff spot and they're stocking up for the future. If Yzerman pulls that off, it's a good time to be a Tampa Bay fan. You might make the playoffs and you've got future assets. Now, in the case of Quincy, that's interesting because Detroit took him in the 2003 entry draft, round four, 132nd overall. And I forgot that till I heard that last night, so I'm not trying to show off here. I read that, and I thought, wow. So basically they had him for a bit. He had a few cups of coffee with the team. He had a bit of a playoff run in 6-0-7, 13 games. Then he sends them, it's like Detroit sends them out in the league to, like, go West, young man, and mature, and then we'll bring you back when we need you. And they paid a higher price for him. That's kind of interesting how he's sort of come full circle in that sense.
Well, and I think the Red Wings and Ken Holland and Jim Nill and company have great confidence, obviously, they should, in their scouting staff. And, okay, they didn't send him to Grand Rapids. They sent him for his NHL seasoning elsewhere and bring him back at a higher level of development. Very interesting and shows that they have the conviction of their original judgment.
What I like most about that, too, and I don't know, they know much more than I do, of course. That's why they're a Stanley Cup contender, is some teams, I would think, in any sport might not do a trade like that for a variety of reasons, because some people don't want to admit that, well, maybe we should have kept him in the first place or that sort of thing. Oh, we've been there, done that sort of thing. I think Detroit, which makes them so good, is they look at it dispassionately and go,
right,
how would this gentleman help us? Well, let's reacquire him.
Yeah, they remove themselves from worrying about appearances.
Yeah.
Let me ask you, Pete, about the Central Division and the injury bug that seems to have grabbed hold here. Datsyuk, Taves, and Langenbrunner all injured in the last few days. Datsyuk having surgery for getting some debris, I think, removed from his right knee. And Taves and Langenbrunner also on the shelf. To see the three teams that have been on decent rolls and duking it out here in that one division, kind of surprising to see three guys, three big names like that go down all at once.
Isn't it ever? And particularly when you consider that was Detroit without Datsyuk going against Chicago without Taves last night, and Chicago emerging victorious there. And by the way, you know, this time a week ago, we were talking about the floundering Blackhawks. Well, now they have won their last four games, and they are making people do the old look back over your shoulder a little bit, and they've gotten hot as hot can be. St. Louis, with Jamie Langenbrunner out right now, yeah, they still fared very well. At least they got the news yesterday and did not have to play a game last night. This is going to be, I think, and we addressed this a little bit last week, and that is, if there are Central Division teams matched up, for example, in the first round of the playoffs, will there be just a survivor, Or will there be somebody who is ready to move on, or will they just, you know, beat the bejeebers out of each other?
Bejeebers, I like that word. I had an image of, like, cartoon cats again fighting.
Yes.
And fur everywhere.
Wile E. Coyote just getting vaporized.
Yeah, the anvil falling on his head. Never never shop from Acme. It never works.
No.
In the case of streaks, as you said, and teams are streaking. Sports, as you know, Pete, you've done football, you've done baseball, obviously hockey. Sports is streaky, and we get caught up in streaks. We make too much of the winning streaks, and we make too much of the losing streaks. The only time that, I mean, it matters, it all adds up for the playoffs. You want to have more winning streaks than losing streaks. You want to mitigate, you want to limit the losing streaks, obviously. But the only time it really matters is when you get in the playoffs. We could be sitting here 2 weeks from now going, wow, Chicago cooled off a bit again. And in the case, I thought of that of Anaheim. Anaheim, to make the playoffs, basically have to almost... Well, they almost have to get a point almost every game, and you know that's not going to happen. And if they could have gotten a point last night in their loss, that would have been a big deal. And that was to Tampa Bay, who are trying to make the playoffs too. And it's just funny because Tampa's now 5 out in the East, Anaheim 6 out. But my perception is Anaheim's the charging team.
Yes.
While Tampa isn't, because they're doing all the trades. So that was, to me, a big loss for Anaheim last night. They win that. They insert themselves back in with some authority. I'm not saying they're out of it. But they need to get a point almost, at least a point almost every game.
Right. And this has been, what a run for them. 15-3-4.
But it can't continue. It's not normal to stay that way, right?
Correct.
There's going to be some sort of coming back to earth.
I was just going to say, a gravitational effect.
There you go.
It has to be forthcoming for them. And, and they start this one game left on this 8-game road trip, and they've only dropped one of those in regulation. So they have been something to certainly keep an eye on. But it tells you, you know, from how far back they had begun this particular run of theirs. And they're, it would seem, shortly to be able to flip-flop with the Minnesota Wild, but that will still leave them four teams, rather, to try to pass.
We were talking earlier about the LA Kings and just where they're at with their playoff battle here and trying to get in the flip-flopping that we're seeing on a nightly basis. But this is where that one point really stands out, doesn't it? Because they managed to get back in eighth, and Calgary falls out. But with that one point, man, it just makes such a difference. And so to me, that's where my my previous feelings that it's not a win, it's not a loss, but it's also not a tie. It's kind of a lie to me because they pick up that one point. So I know that the media will often say, well, they've lost five in a row. Well, I'm sorry. If you pick up 2 points in that stretch, you haven't lost, because the LA Kings last night did not lose, did they?
They did not lose, but they blew a 3-0 lead in that game. And here's another factor and a group of fans, I think, likely chuckling this morning, and those would have to be those of the Edmonton Oilers. They can take some mirth in what they were able to accomplish against the Calgary Flames last night in Calgary, preventing Calgary from holding on to a playoff spot by that one point. And guys, we're talking about splitting hairs. Big conference call last night about the clocking mechanisms. Certainly two Columbus games that's come up in over the course of the last 10 days or so. And it came up for the Predators game in Dallas on Sunday as well, that we have been informed by the league operations that the burn-in clock we see as we're replaying and trying to determine. For example, our clock on our telecast showed on Sunday that Shea Weber's power play shot, as the first period was running down, did indeed beat the clock. It showed by 0.2 seconds. But we've since been told that that is not the real time that we were showing there. The league has the fiber optical delivery back to them showing the actual time in the Situation Room in Toronto. But what we're showing our viewers, it turns out, is delayed ever so slightly by the way things are processed. So we're trying to correct that now, so the people at home, and the people, for that matter, the most important ones, in the rink can tell precisely how much time is remaining.
Why is this only coming to light now? I know there's been incidents in LA. I know
it's those columns.
But why this year? Why this year? Because this has always been around then.
Yeah, exactly. It's those columns we've been talking about with Dean Lombardi, the Los Angeles Kings general manager, when he made that explanation after the Columbus at Los Angeles game, and Drew Doughty's game-winning goal, where it appeared that the whole thing had just gone into a bit of a pause.
But you guys also know that, you know, it's kind of like the goal judge, right?
Yes.
They don't turn the light on until
human reaction time.
The referee has actually indicated that there's a goal. And we heard that, I believe, I want to say in last night's game, Pete, with you guys, that, but maybe not. Maybe it
not
was,
ours, no.
Oh, maybe it was a Toronto game where there was just a softy that went in, and or it was an Ottawa game earlier this week. Anyway, whatever it was a soft goal. It wasn't obvious, and so the red light didn't come on, and whoever was doing the play-by-play noted that. Hey, the red light's not on yet. Oh, there it is. Well, yeah, because they have to wait until the referee indicates it. So my solution is let's save a few bucks, put a button on the belt of the referee, and he can activate the red light, and you save yourself paying a couple of off-ice officials to sit there and just be part of the light show.
There you go. I'd be willing to do that.
My cost-cutting method of the week here.
However, things have happened, too, with the referee's microphones, where for some reason or another that things got, let's talk about reverse polarity in the decision-making process, where Mike has been on when it's supposed to be off and vice versa. There was a night a few years ago where Terry Crisp and I were sitting in our broadcast location listening to the referees have a bit of a discussion inside their room during the intermission. So
now that's 24/7.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
I want to bring something up off the beaten path here. I'm just looking. When you mentioned Datsyuk, I wanted to see where he was in the scoring race. He's 11th with 59 points in 59 games. As I always say, if you're a point-a-game guy in this day and age, you are one of the better players. It's tough to be in the Gretzky-Lemieux stratosphere anymore. It's just not going to happen.
He was there last Friday night, I'll tell you.
Yeah, well, there are moments, absolutely. I would not argue that. But of the top 10 scorers this year, 8 of them are from the Eastern Conference. Have we seen that? Well, I know off the top of your head you're not going to know that. I would assume that would be more balanced. And when I go through the next 10, it's balanced precisely. 11 to 20 is 5 in each conference. To me, I always got the impression the West would be the higher scoring one. And it still may be if you're breaking down team by team. But in the East, and the two guys from the West, by the way, are the Sedin brothers who cracked the top 10.
Right. By the way, they really were not a factor in last night's game, the Sedin brothers, which was very intriguing for me to watch. Let's see what the Sedins were in last night's game. Henrik, playing just under 20 minutes, had no shots on goal. And Daniel had one shot on net, playing, as it turned out, 19:08, and had two more that were blocked and one that missed. So on occasion, now that of course is a factor of cooling off and on because their previous two games they had combined for what, 12 points.
Well, who played against them? Who shut them down?
Well, really last night it was essentially the Fisher line and Hal Gill being out there a lot.
There you go.
Yeah.
I like it. They're saving themselves for the Detroit game. That's what it was.
It might have been. It might well have been.
Pete, thank you for today and we will talk to you in 7 days.
Looking forward to it, gentlemen. And I know that everybody has to make sure. And, guys, I want you to hydrate yourselves and get every little nap you can between now and the big countdown to 3 p.m. Eastern on Monday.
Well, all you have to do is mention Rick Nash, and I fall asleep. So, okay.
Well, those nine scouts or whatever in Columbus last night, including two from Pittsburgh, did not.
No doubt.
There you go. Thanks, Pete.
Thank you, guys.
Pete Weber, the voice of the Nashville Predators and our Western